Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.
My name's Mick. I hope you're well. Thanks for joining us on the programme today. Mental Health Monday returns the 20th of January 2020, which is the Monday this year that's been associated and affiliated with being the most depressing day of the year. Blue Monday. But there's things going on right across the country to hopefully change that for a few people. We'll talk through some of the issues around what makes today the so-called most depressing day of the year. And we've got a great guest in the studio who is going to talk through an event going on in Liverpool, but there are also mirror events taking place right across the country. Welcome to the programme, Chris McIntosh. Chris, great to see you. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, thanks, Mick. Lovely to be up here.
A couple of years ago, we did our 24-hour mental health show on Blue Monday because we thought, oh, it's the most depressing day of the year. Mm-hmm. What better day to highlight the issue around things like depression, anxiety, stress?
Yeah, sure.
And it turned out that it was actually about 10 years previously, like a travel insurance company just invented it.
Yeah,
as like a thing to try and get people to...
I looked into it to try and see what kind of factors that they were, you know, what they were basing this on, and it all seemed to point towards like just a big cap. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
But I thought that because we thought, well, we'll do it on that day because it's a good day
yeah,
to do it.
Why not,
like.
Yeah.
But then it's probably fair to say, isn't it, this time of year... I don't know. I always kind of get the sense that the year kind of opens out like mm-hmm. like this sort of gaping chasm in front of you, whereby yeah. it's kind of winter and you kind of go to work in the dark and you get home in the dark.
Yeah,
and the weather closes in. You're skint from Christmas.
Yeah, and the kind of novelty and the excitement of Christmas is worn off, and maybe you've fell off the wagon on a few of your New Year's resolutions and stuff, and it's still only the third week of January.
Yeah,
I can see it.
I think there's something about the human form though that does that thing where it makes decisions about itself and go, right, I've been doing all of this stuff. I've been going out every night. I've been drinking mm-hmm. all sorts over Christmas and New Year. But as of January the 1st, I'm going to stop all that fun I've been having. That comes to an end.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we then fail 2 weeks in and then we hate ourselves.
Yeah, exactly.
For the
yeah.
fact we've not been able to sustain something.
It's a proper human condition thing. I mean, I've done it all my life with drinking, with eating and stuff. If I've had like, you know, a particularly heavy weekend or week where I've ate pretty badly, I'd be like, right, it's Saturday now, so Monday morning, that's it. I'm going to be dead healthy from Monday morning. But right now, I'll just jump on Deliveroo and just get, like, you know, yeah. just get a little Chinese in or something. But yeah, there is always that kind of, like, giving yourself, I don't know, goals, or, you know, it's always like, right, let's start tomorrow or something, you know.
But yeah, I think that's the thing. But then I think that's part of the thing around New Year's resolutions, isn't it? Whereby we go, right, there's something about myself that I don't like.
Yeah.
And I'm going to change it starting tomorrow.
Exactly, yeah. It's a weird the way we think like that because, you know, essentially you should just be able to go, I don't like that. Let's just start now. Like, yeah. But it is always like people or everyone kind of seems to feel like they need to build up to it. You know, right, starting from then, that's what I'll do. And it's a weird thing to do, really, yeah. Because if you really wanted to do it, like stopping smoking or don't drink as much, just stop. Easier said than done.
Well, I remember seeing a thing once where it was saying that if you want to make a lifestyle change where you're going to go, I'm not going to eat meat, I'm going to stop smoking, I'm going to do more exercise, do it with something which is a bigger thing. So do it when you start a new job.
Yeah.
So when you start a new job in a new office, someone goes, do you want to come out for a cig break? You can say, no, I don't smoke.
Yeah.
And that's like that's something that transcends above just... Mm-hmm. You making a small change, or if you're going to lose weight, do it when you've moved house, so you've got new cupboards, and change the way you do your cupboards, so you're not buying the same sort of thing. I thought, well, that kind of makes sense. Otherwise, everything is just exactly the same, apart from this one thing, which is different. And, then it's like screaming at you constantly.
Yeah, I think the best way to go about any kind of like New Year's resolution or anything that you want to change is don't put too much pressure on yourself and just do it gradually. Don't say, as of tomorrow, I'm going to be vegan. And then like 2 days later, you might slip up or you might put a bit of milk in your coffee or something. Then you beat yourself up and you feel guilty. Don't put that pressure on yourself. Just do it gradually, you know, make small changes every day if you can. And then before you know it, you know, you might find yourself at that level where you wanted to be at. Like, but certainly don't beat yourself up about it. Like.
Also, people do that thing. Oh, I had a drop of milk in my coffee. I may as well now just go and inject dairy really straight into my veins.
Yeah.
You know
what I mean? Straight down the farm. I'll have that cow.
it's a strange thing that people... I'm not allowed to make mistakes. Yeah, and if I do exactly, make a mistake, I'm doubling down on that mistake.
But then people do put that pressure on themselves and then they find themselves like really, you know, peed off with themselves because they feel like they've let themselves down. Yeah. They can't stick to anything. If you don't like... you know, you don't have to do it all at once. Just do like a gradual thing, make tiny changes, and you know, that's just. Just do the best you can.
Now, you're up on stage tonight. There are Bongos Bingo events going on different parts of the country. You're across Manchester, Liverpool, London and Glasgow. And you're doing it to sort of fall in line with the Blue Monday thing in support of Calm as well. An organisation, actually, which the Campaign Against Living Miserably, they used to have big representation here in Liverpool through Simon Howes when he was around as well. But I think... sometimes seen as being a London charity, but they do fantastic work, and it's a really good port of call, the Calm website and the Calm Zone, for anyone who wants to know anything about mental health. It's a really helpful charity.
Definitely, it's a great charity, and it's a really useful source as well. Like, especially because I think for older people, I think a lot of younger people are more kind of astute and are more turned on to, like, you're looking after your own mental health. But I think, like, especially like over 35, maybe it's still that kind of like. Taboo, where it's like, you know, you might not want to talk openly about it, especially like males. But the Calm, especially the Calm website, is such a great source to go, and you can just kind of do it on your own and the privacy of your own home, and you can kind of find out, and you can talk to someone if you want to. It's a great charity.
And you're supporting them through the events. For people who don't know, the Bongos Bingo brand is a worldwide thing now.
It literally is a worldwide thing.
People very much associate, I think, Liverpool has been the very heart of the Bongos Bingo.
It started four years ago in Liverpool, and it's just kind of snowballed really wildly since then. So it started in Liverpool, and then I think it was Leeds, and then Manchester, and then kind of like the northwest, and now it's as far up as Glasgow and Aberdeen, London. Done stuff in Australia. We've done like several tours of Australia now, even as far as Dubai. Johnny and the gang went over a couple of months ago to Atlantis, the Palm in Dubai, and the lads are going back again soon. So it really is very much an international operation now.
It's like, do I say it's bingo on steroids? Is that the right thing to
say? Yeah, I think that's a great description, really. Yeah, or maybe on acid. I think acid might be a better shout.
And with that, brings with it audiences. And I guess when we, you know, raise the issue around mental health, and you throw the Calm situation into it as well, you guys are kind of looking the same way that I find like things like maybe certain bars, certain football clubs can make a connection with groups of individuals who maybe otherwise wouldn't have given mental health a thought.
Yeah.
But you know what? If Bongos Bingo are doing it and talking about it, that's in terms of that normalisation game.
It's a really important process, and Bongos Bingo is a very young organisation. So the idea of using that platform in front of all those people, thousands of people every weekend across the country, is very much like that is a quintessential Bongos Bingo ethos. That is something that, you know, is absolutely Bongos, to use that for good, to try and, like you say, promote and raise awareness for mental health. And like you say, for people that might not give it a second thought, if they see us lot doing it, it might cross their minds to kind of, you know, look after themselves a little bit, or at least talk about it, and maybe think it's not that much of a taboo subject.
In terms of the taboo as well, I'm sort of, I'm 37 years old now, and when you look at the stats and facts around men, risk of suicide, it's quite funny when you then start to think, oh, hang on a minute, this isn't just like a different group of society that you can't quite imagine. These people now who are at great risk of suicide are people like me.
And actually, if you're... And suddenly you find yourself, you're in that age bracket and you are that demographic, like, yeah.
Yeah, and in some circumstances, and there's someone relatively close to a very good friend of mine who took his own life by suicide. And it's so very real, I think, when there's a case close to you, that it's not a stat, it's not a statistic, it's not affiliated with, you know, a day of the week, it's not a Blue Monday event.
Yeah.
It's a tragedy, it's a tragic loss.
Yeah, and it's on your doorstep.
A good friend as well. And I don't know, sometimes when you do events like, I imagine the event tonight, I was at one on Thursday of last week, there's kind of like a feel-good thing, let's talk about this, but the stakes, and I say this all the time, the stakes are so high.
Yeah.
You know, if we don't get this message out then, if we don't get this message right, that we're losing people, we're losing wonderful people, but people who otherwise may have got a bit of help if we'd have known where to point them, if they'd have been able to speak about it.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest problems, because I have also got a very dear friend who took his own life a few years ago, Paul Williams, also known as Jeff. We were in a band together, we were in 28 Costumes, he was our bass player, and he moved to Sheffield, and he got himself, you know, I don't want to get it too deep into it, but he got himself... into some trouble that he felt like he couldn't talk about, you know, and he kept it. And I think that was the kind of the reason, the crux of the matter why he ended up doing what he did, was because he didn't feel like he could talk openly to people about it. So I think that's a really important message to try and hammer home to people, that it's so important to open up. No one's going to be judging you. You know, if you talk to friends, and your friends aren't going to be judging you, it's just really important to unburden yourself and be open about it. Because until you start doing that, you're not going to deal with the problem. It's just going to get worse and get heavier inside. Like, so yeah, I think it's charities like Calm who encourage that, and the events that we're doing, like with Bongos, are really important to raise that awareness.
People often say, if I'd only known about this sooner or before the event, I'd have been more clued up, I'd have learned about it. And I think it's amazing the number of people who essentially become experts around mental health and suicide. But to get to that point, they've had to go through the loss of a loved one.
Yeah,
through a tragedy. It's just that thing of
how do
we tip it back?
It's weird because, you know, if you break your arm or you break your ankle or something, that's like it's a physical ailment that you can see and you can go to the doctors and get it treated. But I guess with mental health, it's a little bit more of a mystery because you can't see it, and it's not like an actual physical pain or whatever. So it's just about trying to bring mental health in line with, like, you know, breaking your ankle or something like that. Like, you just look at it as your mind's a little bit broke, or you need to like fix it, or you need to, that's I think it's about trying to normalize it and getting people to view it in line with that, you know, like a broken ankle or something.
Yeah, I think people though, I think they think, if somebody kicks through you in five a side and your ankle snaps in half,
yeah,
you're going to go, I can't play anymore.
Yeah.
Just kick through my ankle and it's broken in half.
I need to go to hospital and I need to have time off.
Whereas with the mental health, it's, I think you view it as your own failure.
Yeah, definitely,
It's the equivalent of going, look, I need to carry on here, because if I don't carry on, people will think that my body,
it's a weakness. Yeah, exactly.
Even though quite clearly what had happened is you're in a great deal of pain and you need to get that pain sorted.
Yeah, exactly.
And there are professionals who can help
you. Who can help you, yeah, absolutely.
But then it's it becomes a thing of you thinking, well, no, because then people will think that I've failed.
Yeah, and it is, it's a hard one to kind of get out of that mentality, I think. I think a lot, especially for, like, you know, men of our age kind of thing, because I'm 38, a year older than yourself. And it is, you know, you do kind of feel, all right, this is a weakness. You know, people are going to think I'm weak if I come out and say I'm, you know, suffering a bit of depression or feel a bit anxious, I can't go on tonight or something, like, you know, it is a sign of weakness.
But I always say, where's the example set to us in our generation that said at any point on TV and film, hopefully people had it in their family, where you could stand up and you could say in school, maybe, where people would go, you know what? Real men will share their emotions. Real men will. Instead, we got the old keep calm and carry on.
It was that, you know, stoic, horrible British thing. Yeah, yes.
Which is depressing in itself. We're the generation that brought man up along with us. And we've had that. I can never remember anyone above me in years at school or on TV with messages of men can actually do different things.
Yeah.
I think we were probably the first generation which had women can also do the things that men do.
Yeah.
We kind of brought that with us a little bit.
Definitely.
But at the same time, it's always been men look like this and real men look like this.
Look like this, act like this. I remember being younger, and I'm not going to say my mum. You know, mums. I heard mums when I was younger, you know, if a kid was crying and then they'd say, stop crying or I'll give you something to cry about. And I was like, wow. That's such a mental thing to say, like, you know.
But I was on the playground with my 5-year-old daughter, and there was a dad there with his little lad who was 3, and he was crying and moaning. And my little girl was running around and playing and jumping on the trampoline. She was great. And he was saying to his lad, he was crying, stop being such a girl. I felt like saying to him,
that's horrific.
I felt like saying to him, mate, your little whingy little brat of a kid.
Yeah.
He's a boy. He's not crying because of his gender. And if he was more like a girl, he'd be like my little girl,
yeah,
which is running around, climbing, not crying, and having.
Yeah,
so if
exactly,
anything,
yeah.
She should be. You want him to be more like the girls around him, because therefore you'd see that they're not whinging and crying.
I'm, you know, I'm all for that. Be more girl.
When I thought of it in my head, I thought that is such a great thing to say, but I didn't want a black eye.
So no, I know. Yeah.
So you know what? I didn't say anything.
Well, yeah. Well, you know,
I should have manned up, shouldn't I?
There you go, yeah. Another good one.
There you go. We've got Chris McIntosh with us, the host of the Bongos Bingo event tonight. Johnny Bongo will be on stage as well in Liverpool. It's at Content, Manchester at the Albert Hall, London's The Grand in Clapham, and SWG3 in Glasgow as well. Your own mental health has been something you've been very much keen to stay on top of as a result of things that happened when you were younger.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I think when I was younger, I was less keen or willing to talk about it. But obviously, as I've gotten older and seen people around me, you know, fall to poor mental health, it's just become apparent how important it is to kind of be open about it. So, yeah, I started. I was always been in bands. So when I was like 21, I was in a band called 28 Costumes, and I started self harming. You know, around the age of 21, 22, it just went on for years, but I just kind of kept it to myself. And then eventually I think I got caught by me, you know, my mum saw a scar or something, or, you know, and it was a very, really ugly moment, really horrible moment, like, you know, and then I just kind of broke down and told her about it, and told my partner at the time about it, and then kind of went to the doctors, and they got really good help, and I was prescribed fluoxetine, which has kind of been a big part of my life on and off, on at the moment, like, you know, I come back to it when I need it, you know, when I can feel myself dropping a little bit. But yeah, that's a, you know, a journey that I'm still ongoing, and I'm sure it will do till my last breath, like. But I think as long as we can all talk about it, then it's going to be easier and more beneficial to everyone.
I always try and strike a balance when people come on, when they talk about medication and their mental health, because I think there's still, even within the mental health community, is a stigma around taking medication. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people feel like, well, I'll speak to a GP, or I'll speak to somebody and I'll take part in an exercise club, or I'll start changing my lifestyle.
Yeah.
I don't want to go near medication. But medication can be the real game changer
that
for so many people.
Yeah, and you know, it's not for everyone. When I was a lot younger, I was kind of a bit like the same. I was always against any kind of medication, you know, especially like paracetamol and stuff. I'd be like, no, I don't need anything, I'll battle on through, kind of thing. I really noticed the difference when I started taking fluoxetine quite quickly, you know, and it really kind of took me aback. I was like, wow, I didn't realise that my mood could be affected this much by something that I can just, like, you know, swallow, kind of thing. But the more I researched it and the more I looked into it, it just, you know, it made sense to me. But the other thing that really helped me personally, and everyone's different, so everyone's going to have a different story, and then not everything's going to, what works for me is not going to work for everybody else. But exercise, I always played a lot of football. I hated running, like really hated it, just because it's just, for me, it is still the most boring exercise you can do. Like, you know, I think just getting out there on your own and going and doing nothing. There's no talking to anyone, or there's no, you're not going to like score any boss goals or anything like that. I forced myself to get into it, because when Paul passed away, a few of us signed up to do a 10K. You know, to raise some money for him. I didn't end up doing the 10K. I dropped out after. I got to 7K in the training, and I was like, that's my limit. But what I did find out is, while I was doing the training for it, was how much it affected in a positive way my mental health.
Right.
It was amazing. Like, I could sleep better. I was way more positive. I had so much energy. So that's something I've tried to keep up. And I can't do big distances, which is why I didn't do the 10K, and I won't be signing myself up for any half marathons anytime soon.
If you'd have been doing like a 7K, but with a crossbar challenge halfway through.
Oh, I would have nailed it. Yeah, definitely.
I think, you know, the thing with running, and I'm so pleased that you've just said, I run, but it's boring.
I hate it.
Because I think sometimes, and my brother's like this, but he's one of them where he'll bust out like a 20K, you know, he'll go, yeah, I'm going for a run. And he can run, and he got like proper trainings for doing it and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But he'll talk about running, and he used to run with headphones on, but now he doesn't. And I think Ronnie O'Sullivan, he talks about it as well, where he just was running one day listening to an iPod. He took it off and threw it in a bush.
Yeah.
I don't know why he just...
I don't know, he should have just kept all that, I feel.
It would have been, you know, stick it on eBay, Ronnie O'Sullivan's old iPod, 200 quid, could have given it to charity.
He could have given it to charity.
He threw it in, and then I've then tried to run, and people go, oh yeah, it's difficult at first, but you just got to break through that first bit, and then you kind of hit your stride and hit your rhythm. And you clear your head, and you think about different things. But I've never, ever been able to get past that first thing that made me go, oh, this isn't... feel it. I've done half a mile here. I've done a mile. I feel a bit tired now. I'm not really enjoying it that much. And people, no, that's the point. You really push yourself. But that's the point. My body's screaming, going, Mick, what are you doing?
Just stop. Stop, man. Give it up. Turn back round. Get in a nice hot bath. No, I know what you mean. I can see the plus sides of both. Because a jog, I don't put it on Strava because all my mates are like really good joggers and they put like mad distances on. I hide my own Strava so no one can see it because it's embarrassing.
The other thing, you're then supposed to encourage yourself and your friends by letting everybody know how much you've failed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't want anyone to know how slow I run and how short distances. But yeah, I tried it with the headphones on. The thing about the headphones is that you can put the music on and it does kind of take you to somewhere else. You know, so you forget that you're running, which is the main thing for me. But I do like the idea of while you're running or exercising or swimming or whatever, because I do quite a bit of swimming. You wouldn't think it to look at me, but I do. I do start like compartmentalising things and like without realising it. Like I don't do it on purpose, but before I know it, when you kind of get in the zone or for want of a better phrase, you just kind of start dealing with the little things that need dealing with in your life. Right, I've got to finish that or I've got to... Right, today what I'll do. And I just come out kind of feeling like, right, I know what I've got to do now. And you just have that energy. But like I say, it's different for everyone. So just you've got to do whatever works for you.
But I think that it's amazing, isn't it, that the body almost has built into it these sort of like defrag sort of things, skills.
Yeah.
That if you mentioned sleep. Sleep is so crucial, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, where people go, oh, I'm really struggling at the moment, and they're getting 4 or 5 hours sleep a night. They're not being able to exercise. And your body, I think, has built into it sort of these coping strategies.
Yeah.
It's the exercise. It's the things that flow through your body when you're doing something like that that allow you to, you know, compartmentalize issues that you're going on, that the sleep resets everything in your brain, that you start the day, your body feels fresh and all that kind of thing. Your body's ready for all that stuff. But then we try and cram our bodies into these lifestyles.
That's it, yeah.
Which don't necessarily allow those things to ever kick in.
I've heard a few different descriptions of like, you know, what mental health is. But for me, it's like noise. I can just describe it as noise. And it's not like a noise that you can hear in your ears. But like, you know, when I'm feeling or my head is really tight and there's just too much going on, like you've took on too much. There's too much in your life going on that you can't keep up with the thoughts that you need to kind of deal with to get everything done. But that is where like the exercise comes into it, because you don't have to do anything. You've got no responsibility. You're just on the road or you're just in the pool, and then just automatically your brain just starts going, blah, 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 okay, you can do this and you got to do that. And then you come out and you kind of, but it gets rid of the noise for me. Like,
can you feel those sort of things coming along and think, you know what will solve this? A blast in the pool.
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. And my girlfriend will send me out. Yeah. You know, when she can see that I'm like kind of a bit tightly wound, because we've recently just had a new baby as well. And that's tough, because obviously it's a beautiful thing having a baby. But I was dreading the lack of sleep, you know, because everyone was like, oh, and I love sleep. I like 10, you know, 8 hours a day. And 10 at night, if I can. so I was really worried about that. But doing Bongos Bingo has been really great for me, because it's a really luxurious position where you actually only do shows 2 or 3 days a week. So the rest of the time, the hosts are kind of off, like, you know, to spend time with the kids and to catch up on a bit of rest. So I'm very lucky in that respect, because at the moment, especially when Anna, my girlfriend, she's a midwife, but she's off at the moment. So I can always sneak off for like a couple of hours in the afternoon. And I know that's going to change when she goes back to work, but for now.
But that's another great conversation to have around people's expectations of what a baby's going to do to your life versus the reality of what a baby's going to do.
It's going to crush your life.
It's that thing.
It's not.
When people say that, and I've said this before on the program, so forgive it if I'm repeating myself. When people go, "Oh, the day your kids are born is the greatest day of your life," you're like, well, I wouldn't want to. I want to relive the greatest day of my life.
And I wouldn't want, that's not the one I wanted.
And I'm pretty sure my partner would probably say she something else. Didn't necessarily want
just
to
like
go
a nice day out
again.
At a theme park or something.
But like as they get a little bit older, a little bit, they start giving you a little bit of something. They're for me much more sort of like magical sort of moments. But then it's that thing of, well, if I don't think that was the greatest day of my life, Are you a bad dad? Am I a bad dad? Do I not love my kids as much as other people's?
No, I think you're just absolutely realistic. Like there's the brutal truth of the matter. The first 6 months of being a dad or being a parent is like lack of sleep. and you get nothing back, just this weird little blob that you have to carry around with you, you know, that's unresponsive for 6 months. Now, like Juno, my little girl, she's kind of getting a little bit more, you know, she looks back at you and she smiles and stuff. So I can see, you know, it's starting to make sense to me now a little bit.
Absolutely. The Bongos Bingo event in Liverpool, you still got tickets for tonight?
No, it's completely sold out. I think there's some tickets left for the London one. I don't know how many London listeners you get on Radio City Talk, but yeah, the Liverpool one, the Glasgow one, the Manchester one is all sold out. The Bongos Bingo events generally tend to sell out in about like 10 minutes. So you've got to be pretty on the button if you want tickets.
I was going to ask you the question, but you kind of answered it in your last response about how being part of something where it's kind of big time fun and a big time fun event.
But, yeah.
You might not always feel like big time fun yourself, but actually you almost hinted at it then that you find it because of the time you're allowed to have off. That
yeah.
Do you build yourself back up to
yeah.
being Mr. Big Time Fun Guy?
Yeah, definitely. And it's, you know, it's almost like, it's comparable to acting, I think, you know, in a way. The show's 3 hours long and you kind of build yourself up to it. You get in the van. I normally do Leeds and Sheffield, sometimes Birmingham, Leeds. So we all leave from Liverpool. We all get in the van, myself, the two dancers and the tech and the driver. And that time in the van is when I start going, right, let's start getting in the mode now, you know, in Bongo's Bingo mode. So that, like, the time 8 o'clock comes and you walk on stage, you're at full chaos mode, you know, ready to go kind of thing. Because I think when it first started, I was like, you know, having a couple of drinks to try and settle my nerves. And then got to the point where I was like, I don't really want to drink every time I do it. You know, that's not the lifestyle I want to live. So now I'm trying to get to the point where I can just walk on sober. And I haven't quite got it yet, but it's definitely in the post. Going back to what I was saying about not being so harsh on yourself. Gradual monkey step, you know, slowly, slowly catching monkey.
But if you... presumably from the audience, they're there, they kind of know what the night's about, they're ready for a good time. Must yeah. be great that, you know that if you're going to give it out there to the crowd, you're going to get it back.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And that is the thing, even if you were to walk on stage and maybe you hadn't had the best day, you walk on that stage at Bongos and you've got 800 people who just scream as soon as you walk on, and that's enough just to get you going. Even if you didn't have a drink, you know, the adrenaline kicks in. And you start feeling it kind of thing, and then you put the first song on, everyone's up on the on the benches dancing, and then you're in, you know you're in for the next 3 hours then.
Bongosbingo.co.uk for events and links to tonight. You can also do all the other stuff as well, various other things on the website as well. But if you type in bongosbingo.com, it's always like, I think it's X calm. It's like versus.
Yeah, time. Yeah, times calm, yeah.
With,
alongside.
If you type that into any search engine, you'll get the links there. That extra gig, which still has tickets available, is the London gig at the Grand in Clapham. Thank you so much, Chris, for joining us on the
program. It's been a real pleasure. Thanks for having
really
me.
Really sort of glad that you were so open and honest about your own journey, as well as hearing about the great work you do through Bongos Bingo as well. Can I ask you what you do post-show? Because when you've had the room of 800 people screaming, you're presumably locked in the van. Do you decompress?
We decompress. We have like, we get back in the van, and normally a couple of hours journey. Sometimes it depends how tired we are, how much we've given. Like, you know, sometimes everyone will just go to sleep in the van, or other times we'll get Spotify on and we'll have a sing-along and have a couple of drinks. Like, but some of the younger lads, you know, they might go out into town afterwards then. But for me, it's like I get back into a really quiet house and creep into bed with my six-month-old baby and my girlfriend. So it's very different. Very different coming home. Homecoming, yeah.
Best of luck with the baby as well.
Thank you very
Great
much.
Great times to be had.
Yeah. Can't wait.
They're all coming, I'll tell you.
They're all coming one day, yeah.
Chris McIntosh, I guess, on this week's Mental Health Monday from Radio City Talk.
Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
On Radio City Talk.